We're holding your Dalad Omud Beis, the 8 lines from the bottom. Continuing with the Mishnah on the various things that need Dayanim and how many of them they need. The Mishnah said Hekdeshus Bishlosha, that Hekdesh requires 3. So what we mean is that Pidyon, so we mean redeeming Hekdesh. So Rashi gives an example. Let's say somebody had donated a behemoth tmeya to Hekdesh. So that animal now it belongs to Hekdesh. If he wants to redeem it to be able to use it, then we're saying we need three people to evaluate it. So the Gemara says, we're saying that that Hekdesh in the Mishnah had said requires 3 people to evaluate it in order to buy it back from Hekdesh.
Which Dasha?
Your Dalad Omud Beis, 8 lines from the bottom.
Okay.
So Hekdesh is Bishlosha. So the Gemara points out Masnisin Deloiki Haitana. Our Mishnah, which is saying that 3 is enough for that purpose, is not like the following Tana. The Tanya, Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Afilu Tzinoda Shel Hekdesh. And even if you have a tiny little tzinoda of Hekdesh, and we'll explain in a second what a tzinoda is, sucha sora b'nei odom l'fidosa, you need 10 people to evaluate it in order to buy it back from Hekdesh. Rashi defines tzinoda as a little fork that's used for spinning gold threads. Tosfos discusses that there are a few other possibilities of what Sinoda is. We also find that Sinoda is also used of various other small tools. It also, for example, it means the hook of an earring. It also means a little pointy thing or whatever for cleaning out wicks and oils like from the menorah. So there are several different implements called tzinoda. So basically, in other words, a tzinoda is a little sharp instrument of one of various kinds. Anyway, Rabbi Elazar and Yaakov is saying that even if you have that, so it's a tiny little thing, you need 10 people to be involved in being poydeh. Omelet a papa la baya, said a papa asks a baya why. Why in our Mishnah do you need 3? Bishleimel le Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. I can understand according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. He would say, why does he say you need 10 for anything of Hekdesh? Kishmuel, Do'ama Kishmuel. He would say, like what Shmuel says later on, Do'ama Shmuel, Asara Koinim Ksuvim Beparisha. When it talks about in Parishas Bechokosai, when it talks about a person had donated land to the Beis Mikdash, and then he wants to buy it back. So the pasuk says 10 times in those psukim, it says the word koyim. So to be exact, it actually breaks it down. You have first it talks about parashas erchin. First it talks about the case where a person declared that I'm going to pledge my erech or somebody else's erech to the Beis Mikdash, and 3 times in that connection it mentions the word koyim. If he has enough money to pay the erech, you don't need a koyin, just give it to the koyin, and that's that. But if he doesn't have enough money to pay the erech, then a koyin has to evaluate his financial capabilities and decide how much he can give, how much he has to give Hekdesh. So 3 times it says koyin there. Another 3 times it says when it comes to another 3 times when it comes to an animal that a person donated to Hekdesh, and we don't mean an animal for a korban, we mean an animal that can't be used for a korban. It's a baal mum, or it's an actual behemoth tmei or whatever. And then 4 times it says when it comes to karka, where a person donates land to Hekdesh and wants to buy it back. So altogether 10 times. So Shmuel points out that 10 times in the parasha, overall, it says the word koyin, and therefore Shmuel learned says it's based on that we said in the Mishnah that you need 10 people when it comes to evaluating the value of karka that a person had donated to Hekdesh. He wants to buy it back from Hekdesh, so you need altogether 10 because of those 10 times koyin that it says in the parasha. But where are the Chachamim getting that 3 is enough, as it said in our Mishnah? Well, then you're going to say, well, very simple, because again, let's break it down, and we're saying that you have 3 by Erchin, 3 by Behemoth Meya, and 4 by Karka. So you're going to say, okay, it says 3 by Behemoth Meya, and therefore you need 6, and then therefore you need 3 only. The question is, well, then the question is, when karka, when it says that you have all of the 10 times koyin, only 4 of them does it say in connection with karka. So it should be enough to do 4. And yet the Mishnah had said, and you're going to say, okay, yeah, so 4 is enough for karka. No, alama tanan, then why do we learn in the Mishnah, akakoris tishiva koyin, that karka requires 9 yisraelim plus 1 koyin. So we see that, in other words, when it comes to karka, we're taking all the words koyin throughout those 3 sections and we're combining them together to arrive at a number of 10. So Elamai Dimashli Bahu Asara. So then you're going to say, okay, maybe what it is, in other words, it's cumulative. You're adding together. So by Erchen, you need 3, let's say, you would say. And then when it comes to Karka, since it's mentioned last, then you have all 3 groups. You're saying that all of them are tied together. Tilmud Tachtona Me'el Yonah, Rashi says you would learn the later one from the earlier one. So you would say you need 3 plus 3 plus 4, and that's why you need 10 by Karka. Well, then by that logic, why don't we say by Hekdesh that you have 6 so far, because you have 6, you have 3 for Erchin and 3 for Behemoth Meah. So you should say, therefore, that when it comes to Metaltlin of Hekdesh, you should require 6 to evaluate them by that logic. So the Boshita, so you should require 6. Because that's the second one of these 3 sections over there. So the one says Kasha, you're right, it's a Kasha, how the Chachamim are saying that you're getting 3 given all of the above. On the face of it, either they should be saying 10, like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, meaning that we're taking the 10 that apply, that we're taking the 10 that you have in that entire, across those 3 parashiyos, and applying it across the board, or you should say with each section it's going to be cumulative, however many you have so far, on the face of it, by Erchin you should need 3, by Hektish of Metaltlin you should need 6, and Hektish of Karka you should need 10. So where are they getting 3? When it comes to Hektish of Metaltlin, the Gemara says Kasha, it's a Kasha. Nevertheless, you know, as usual, Kasha is not a Tiyufta. It doesn't mean we've slugged up what the Chachamim are saying. The fact is, the Halacha is like the Chachamim, that you only need 3 when it comes to Metaltlin of Hektish. 10 you need only when it comes to Karka. Next, the Mishnah had said Erchin Chula. The Mishnah had said that Erchin, Erchin HaMetaltlin, the Mishnah had said, Erchin that are Metaltlin require 3. So what does that mean? Erchin, an Erech means when a person says, I pledge my Erech, or the Erech of Pliny, to the Beis Hamikdash. An erech applies only to a person. There's no such thing as an erech for a keli or anything like that. So the Mishnah had said her erechin hametaltlin chola. So my erechin hametaltlin. So what do we mean by erechin hametaltlin? What does that phrase mean? Omer of Gidol Omer Rav. So we're gonna have a few different answers. So Omer of Gidol Omer Rav, but erech kli ze alai. It means where the person says that I pledge to give. That I pledge to give the erech of this keli to the Beis Hamikdash. Now, what does that mean? A keli doesn't have an erech. An erech refers to a person. So the Omer of Gidol Omer Rav, as we also find Rav Gidol himself saying in the name of Rav, Ha'omer erech kli ze olai, when a person says, I pledge the erech of this keli, and I pledge to give it to the Beis Hamikdash, noisin domov, then instead we say, so obviously the keli itself doesn't have an erech, but what we mean is, in other words, then he would have to pay the value of that keli to the Beis Hamikdash. Now when it comes to hektish, we draw a distinction between erech and domim. With a person, you can have both. A person can have that, A person has an erech, namely if a person says I pledge my erech or somebody else's erech, then we look up in Parshas Bechukosai in the first section that we just talked about a minute ago. You look over there based on the person's age, based on male or female, and you have a certain fixed amount that you're paying hektish, unless he can't afford it, and then he pays less, as we're going to talk about soon. And then you have domim. Now that doesn't depend on the person's physical, strength or capabilities or anything like that. It's just a fixed value based on age and gender. Then you have domim, which is where a person says domai alai or domai plenio alai or whatever. And there we actually uh, there Then we look at how much they're actually worth, suppose they were to be sold as a slave or a maidservant, and we calculate accordingly. So by a person, you have both Erech and Domim. By a Keli, there's no such thing as Erech. So Rav Gidol is saying that instead you give Domim. My time, Odom Yedesh, and Erech Lakli, because a person knows there's no such thing as an Erech for a Keli. By definition, a Keli not having an Neshama has only Domim. The gum of Omer Shum Domim, and therefore he decides that what he's doing is he used the word Erech, but nevertheless he meant to say Domim, because as we say, Einod Amotzi Dvorov Vatala, a person doesn't just speak meaninglessly. So if he's saying something, we assume that he wants to make something of it, namely that he wants it to be Domim. So Tosfos points out that in other places in Shas, the Gemara explains that specifically Rav Meir holds that way. That's the first explanation of our Mishnah. So therefore, Mishum Hachi knows him Domov. So therefore, that's why he gives the Domim. So in other words, when the Mishnah says for Erchin Hametaltlin means Erchin of Metaltlin. So in other words, he decided that he's going to give an erech of metaltlin, and instead we're saying he's paying a certain amount. So now, when we have to figure out how much the keli is worth, then we need three people to evaluate it. The question is, hi erechin hametaltlin, then why is the Mishnah using the word erechin that are metaltlin, erechin shel metaltlin mibayle? Then in that case, it should say erechin of metaltlin, which is what we're talking about. Okay, so the Gemara says, Tani, Erchin Shamatautlin, fine. So read the Mishnah that way. Understand that the words Erchin Hamatautlin in the Mishnah means Erchin Shamatautlin. That's one way of explaining that. That's a way of explaining the Mishnah. And yeah, it doesn't, the wording is a little bit off, but that's not a big deal. Okay, that's the first answer. Rav Chista Omer Avimi. Rav Chista says in the name of Avimi, another answer. But Makpis Metaltlin Erchin. What we mean is, where a person did pledge his own erech, or somebody else's erech, but then he pledges that he's going to take these metaltlin and use them to pay off his erech. So in other words, let's say, so he's a man between 20 and 60 years old. We look up in Parashas in B'chokosai, and we find that he owes 50 shkolim to the Beis Hamikdash. So he takes a keli, which is worth 50 shkolim, or which he perceives to be worth 50 shkolim, and he says that I'm going to give this to the Beis Hamikdash to pay off my erech. So now we need three people to actually evaluate it and see whether indeed it is worth 50. Well, the question is, hi erchin hametaltlin. Again, that doesn't really fit with the wording of the Mishnah, which says erchin hametaltlin, metaltlin shall erchin mibayle. Then it should say the other way around, metaltlin of erchin. Because in other words, you have the erech comes first, and then you have the metaltlin is being used for the purpose of erchin. Okay, so the Gemara says also, again, not such a problem, Tony Metaltlin shall erchin. Fine, you can reinterpret the words of the Mishnah that way, that it means metaltlin that are going to be used to pay off erchin. Then a third answer. Rabbi Bahu Omar, ba'omer erki alai. Again, we are talking about Rabbi Bahu says that he says I pledge my erech. But the difference is, unlike in Rav Chista's answer, where then he's saying that I myself am going to take this particular metaltlin and use it to pay off that erech. Here actually we're talking about that he doesn't pay it himself, and the kohen comes to take a mashkin from him until he pays up. So he comes to take from him and finds that he has metaltlin. So so he says I pledge my erech, but he hasn't yet designated any particular metaltlin to pay it off. So now when the Kohen comes and finds metaltlin, then we need three people to evaluate the value of that metaltlin. So Bok Kohen, Ligus Men and metaltlin, if the Kohen now comes to take metaltlin from him Bishloisha, then it's enough to have three people evaluate it. Karkois, but if he wants to take Karka from him Basora, then you need 10, because as usual, with Karka, you always need 10. So that's a third explanation of what it means. So now that does fit with the words of the Mishnah, metaltlin, erchin hametaltlin, namely erchin that are being paid off with metaltlin. So that's the third explanation of the Mishnah. The Rashash actually has a lot of difficulty with that in that case. And why mention specifically Erchin? Then the same thing would apply. The same thing would apply to Domim. And he goes and discusses at some length that in the first two answers, at least you have a chiddush in the Mishnah. But according to the third answer, what exactly is the chiddush? So he says, and he discusses some points of it. So he says maybe actually the Mishnah really means to say two things. For Erchin, where a person has pledged an Erech and now he can't afford it, so then we have to figure out how much his net worth is so that he can pay it off. So then we would need three people for that. So I'm a Taltlin, and then you would be with a rich person. We're saying over here he can afford it, but he hasn't yet given it, and therefore the Kohenim are coming to take from him something, and the question is how much they need to take from him. So Omelet of Achami Difti Liravina. So Rav Achamid Difti asks Ravina, then why do we need three people for that? Bishlengel apukim hekdesh, but in shloisha. I understand to take something out of hekdesh. When you have something which is hektish, and now you want to be poided from hektish, then I understand you need three people to evaluate it, because you don't want a person to undervalue it. So when you have three people figuring it out, then it'll come out to be a fair value. But here it's the other way around. In Rav Abohu's case, he pledged an erech, and now we're going to take metaltlin of his and use that to pay off the erech. So it's bringing it into hektish. Shloisha lamali. Why do we need three people to be involved? In evaluating the value of it? So Ravina says svara. Look, you know, it's a svara. Mali ayuli, mali apuki. What's the difference between bringing something into hektish or bringing it out? Meaning, in other words, either way, you're involved with taking something. You're involved with taking something that has a financial value, that has a monetary value, and involved with hektish. So therefore, so you need the same number of people for both. Apuki my timer. After all, why do you need three people when it comes to taking it out of hektish? The reason is dilmatoi, because he might make a mistake, and he might undervalue it, and therefore you need people to be making sure that he's valuing it fairly. Well, ayuli nami jomotoi. Well, then when it comes to bringing it in, then also it may be that somebody will make a mistake and undervalue it, and therefore you need therefore you need three people to make sure that it has the correct value, that it will in fact pay off this erech that he said. Okay. So that's the final explanation. About the other ones, the fact is, I mean, the other explanations are also valid as well. That in the other cases also you may need three people to evaluate them as well. Next, Rabbi Yehuda Oymer Chula. Rabbi Yehuda had said that when it comes to karka, then you need nine Yisraelim plus a Kohen. In the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda had said that yes, you need only three when it comes to evaluating the Metaltlin, but one of those three, Rabbi Yehuda said, has to be a Kohen. I understand the point of Rabbi Yehuda. The fact is, when it talks about this business of evaluating the value of something of hektish and giving hektish the appropriate amount, then it uses the word koyin over and over in the parasha, and therefore you would say that, therefore, according to him, that's why you need a koyin. But of Elul Rabbanan, Koyin Lamalahu, according to the Chachamim, why did it say the word koyin in the first place if, according to the Chachamim, it's fine to have all Yisraelim do this? And the Gemara says Kasha. It's a Kasha why the Chachamim would say that it's fine to have Yisraelim do it rather than requiring exclusively Kohenim, but nevertheless, or at least one Kohen, but again, nevertheless, that's how it is. The Gemara goes on, Akkois Tishav Kohen. We said when it comes to Karka, you need nine Yisraelim plus one Kohen. So Menahan Emili, so where do we know that from, that you need that number? Because like we said before, 10 times in the parasha, it says the word koyin. One is needed Legufe, just to tell us that you need a Kohen. Hanach, having miut, achamiut, when it comes to the other nine, what it is a miut, achamiut. The fact that it's saying over and over, Kohen, 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 means, in other words, so we're saying each time you're excluding anybody else. And we have a rule in Torah, that when you have a miut, achamiut, when you have an exclusion after another exclusion, then actually what you're being is, on the contrary, you're being marbe. You're including that you could include something that otherwise wouldn't have been included. So even you have nine Yisraelim and one Kohen, then it's valid. Maskus or Rav Huna Breder of Nosen. What Rav Huna Breder of Nosen asks on that, Ema Chamisha Kohenim B'Chamisha Yisraelim. Well, fine, but how do you know that it means that it means nine Yisraelim and one Kohen, that you're going to take the miut, achamiut, that far. And Rashi explains, in other words, the idea would be, we would say the first one is Deo Legufoi, the second one would be a miut achamiut, and so you'd say that includes Yisrael. The third one then would be again needed Legufoi, because when now that you have a miut achamiut to include a Yisrael, so then when you have a Kohen, what else is it including? It must be to again limit and say that you need a Kohen, and you're going to go back and forth about like that between one Kohen and one Yisrael. So by the time you reach the tenth one, you're going to have five Kohenim and five Yisraelim. So the Gemara says kasha. So again, it's a kasha why it would be that way. Why indeed the Mishnah is saying that you can have nine Yisraelim and one Kohen. Why indeed you shouldn't need all ten of them to be Kohenim. So, it's a good question. But again, nevertheless, that's how it is. Next. The Mishnah said, "V'odam kayotze behem." The Mishnah continued and said, "A person is like that also." So what does that mean? The question of odam mi kodesh. How could a person belong to hekdesh, such that we should talk about? We're saying that odam kayotze behem means that that person is like karka. You also need nine yisraelim and one koyin to figure out his value. The question is, how does that happen in the first place? A person can't donate himself or another person to hekdesh. Tosfos points out that actually you could. You could be Makdish an Eved Kanani to Hektish. But nevertheless, the Gemara is not assuming that it's that, because the word Odom doesn't necessarily imply an Eved, and also because there's an opinion of Rav in Gemara and Gittin that says if a person is Makdish, a slave, he goes free. So therefore, the Gemara is not assuming that we're talking about over here. The Yad Ramah says similarly, since it says Odom rather than Eved, so we have to be talking about a Ben Chorin. So what does that mean? What's the scenario? Rabbahu says, this goes back to that matter of Erchin versus Domim that we were talking about before. Person says, Domai Alai, I pledge my Domim to the Beis Mikdash, so we have to figure out how much he's worth were he to be sold as a slave. D'Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, that if a person says, Domai Alai, then we evaluate how much he would be worth as though he were a slave being sold in the market, and that's the amount, and that's the amount he has to pay. So we need to figure out how much he's worth. The Eved Itkash Lakakos, we find all over the place where an Eved, there's a hekish between an Eved and Karka, namely we find many examples the way you're Kona and Eved, and the way your koina and the way your koina karka are similar. They're both kesef, the shtar of a chazaka. There's a variety of areas in which avodim are compared to karka. So here also, once we're saying that you need to have ten people for Karaka, nine Yisraelim and one Kohen. So the same would be true when we need to figure out the value of a person insofar as Hekdesh is concerned, insofar as Domim is concerned. The Gemara says, "Boy Rav Ovin." So now Rav Ovin has a question in this connection. Seir ha'omid ligozos b'kama. What would happen? A person had said, for example, that he's going to give his domim to Hektish, and now he has hair which is ready to be cut. So, Bakama, how many people do we need to evaluate the value of that hair? Or we could have, just where he's being Makdish, the hair by itself. That seems to be more the way, where we're talking about he's Makdish, the hair by himself, by itself. So how many do we need? To Gozer's Domi of Shlosha, would we consider that hair as if it was already, and the hair can be used, Rashi points out, it can be used for a variety of things. So you can use it, for example, to make sieves or various kinds of belts or things like that. So nowadays, you would say you could use it for wigs or whatever. So how many people do you need? So a person that donated to Hektish hair that's attached to the head, then how many people do you need in order to evaluate it? The question is, to Gozer's dummy, is that hair considered as though it was already detached from the body, or with Shlosha, and therefore it's enough to have three people, or Kamechuber dummy, or is it considered like it's still attached to Vasara, and therefore you would need 10, because then we would consider it like something that's attached to the Eved, and an Eved, again, we said is compared to Karka. So Rashi is explaining basically the question is whether we're considering it like the Eved or not. So yeah. So the Gemara says Uvasara, and then you would need 10. So Toshma Hamakdish is Abdi in Molin Bo. Let's learn from a Braisa that says that if a person is Makdish, his slave, then Me'ila doesn't apply to it. Because an Eved is like Karka, and Me'ila does not apply to Karka. So Tosfos discusses there are places where we learned, for example, in Bava Basra, there are places where it mentions Me'ila could conceivably apply to Karka, but that would mean actually where the person took something out of the Karka itself. There's Karka that belongs to Hektish, for example, and there's a pit that belongs to Hektish, and he took a clod of dirt out of the pit. But just to use the pit or the Karka or whatever would not be considered Me'ila. So the same thing over here, then Me'ila wouldn't apply to an Eved. Reb Shimon Gamliel, and Molan Besare, Reb Shimon Gamliel says Me'ila would apply to his hair. V'kaimelon, Besare, Omid, Ligoz's Pligi. Now we know that that Machloikas actually refers to whether, if his hair is going to be, his hair is ready to be cut. So therefore, it's already long enough that it's ready to be cut. So Reb Shimon Gamliel is going to consider it as though it was already cut. So Rashi explains, in other words, basically that in effect it's attached to the Karka, and therefore Shimon Gamliel would say it's considered as though it's already cut, and the Chum would say it's considered as though it's attached to the Karka. So when it comes to Hektish, we would say that you need 10 to evaluate it, but we would also therefore say that Me'ila doesn't apply to it. Rabbeinu Hanano gives an explanation instead that Reb Shimon Gamliel is basically saying that it's a question what was included when he was Makdish to Eved in the first place. He explains that Tanakama would say that when he was Makdish to Eved already with long hair, then he wasn't Makdish to hair in the first place. And Reb Shimon Gamliel would say that the hair is because it's still attached, and he would say that it automatically goes together with the Hektish as well. So there is actually, in Rabbeinu Hananel, there's a footnote over here, even if to Gufay Dummy, but even in Gufay, there's no Me'ila, because we just said there's no Me'ila in a slave, so why, according to Reb Shimon Gamliel, would Me'ila apply to the hair if it doesn't apply to the body? So there's a discussion. There's an interesting point from a Menachem Zemba, who was a famous goyin in Poland before the war. He was killed in the Holocaust, Shemming Fundumbo. So he explains that according to Rabbeinu Hananel, the question would be after the hair was already cut off. So then, according to the Tanakhama, it never became Hektish in the first place, so there's no Me'ila, and according to Rabbeinu Shimon Gamliel, it did become Hektish, and therefore Me'ila would apply to it. So the point is that the point is we see that there's machlokas whether the hair that's attached is considered to be part of the body or not. So therefore, that will affect the question over here again when he says that when he's makdish the hair alone, do we need 3 or 10 to evaluate it? 3 like metalplin or 10 like karka? Then it's going to depend on that machlokas, Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim. Well, the Gemara says, Neima Hani Tanoi to Hani Tanoi. Should we have to say then that that machloikus of Reb Shimon Gamliel on the Chachamim is the same as the machloik, as another machloikus Tanoim? It's not. Reb Meir Oima, Yesh Dvorim Shein Kakarka, Ve'enin Kakarka. Reb Meir points out that sometimes you have things which are like Karka, but nevertheless, which are like Karka, but nevertheless they're not like Karka. They're still attached to the ground, but they're still considered to be metaltlin. The Ein Chachamim Moedim Lo, and the Chachamim do not agree with him, and they hold that they're considered completely like anything attached to the ground, and therefore they're bottled to the ground. Ketzad, what does Rameyer mean by that? He says, Eser Gfarim Teunis Masauti Lecha. What happens? Reuben says to Shimon, I gave you 10 grapevines laden with fruit that I wanted you to watch for me. Meaning, in other words, I appointed you a shomer over my grapevines, and they were ready. When I gave them to you to watch, the grapes were already ready to be harvested. And in Ela Chomesh, and Shimon says, it wasn't 10 grapevines, it was 5. Now, if this had been Metaltlin, that would be a classic example of Moedim Miktas, and therefore you'd have to take a shua. What happens over here when we're talking about ground, and there's no shua with Moedim Miktas when it comes to claims involving land? So does he have to swear or not? Rav Meir makes him swear because Rav Meir holds that at this point it's considered a moed of mixtus and it's not considered karka because they're ready to, as the Gemara is going to explain in a second, it's ready to be harvested. The Chum say whatever's attached to the ground is considered part of the ground. We're talking about grapes that are already ready to be harvested. They don't really need to stay on the grapevines anymore. Marsova kipsuras damin or Marsova lav kipsuras damin. So then Reb Shimon Gamliel is going to hold, rather Reb Meir is going to hold that they're considered as though they're already harvested, and therefore modim mixtus would apply to it. And the chum hold they're not, they're considered still like karka, and therefore modim and a shvua modim mixtus doesn't apply to karka. So now should we say then that Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim, when they were arguing about the hair that's attached, should we say that it's the same machloikus? And the Gemara says, Loy, I feel the tame Reb Meir. No, you could say that when we said before that the Chachamim say that the Ilah does not apply to the hair of the Eved. So you could say that even Reb Meir would agree with that. Ad Kan, like Omer Reb Meir Hossam, you know why Reb Meir says in the case of the grapes that they're not considered attached to the ground anymore is the Kol Kamad Shavka Lahu, the longer you leave them on the grapevine, Mikhash Kashi, they're going to get ruined. Eventually, you leave them on the grapevines long enough, they're not going to become any better. They're going to, eventually, they're going to start deteriorating on the vine. There comes a point, you have to harvest them. Abel Sire, but when it comes to the hair, Kol Kama, the Shavka Lahu, the more you leave it on the head, Ashbuchi Mashbach, it improves, it becomes longer and longer, and it's more and more useful for the various purposes that you can use hair for, and therefore even the mayor might agree that it's still considered like Karka, or like the Eved, which is compared to Karka, as long as it's attached to the head. Okay. So fine. In any case, though, the point is we do have at least the machlokes of Shimon Gamliel and Chachamim regarding the hair, and therefore, so whether if the person is makdish the hair, then it's going to be subject to that machlokes. According to Rashi, again, the point is whether because the hair is attached to the eved, therefore it's considered like the eved, which is karka. According to Rabbi Chanan, the question is, was he makdish the hair in the first place? Okay. So that ends all of the ones in the Mishnah where we said that you need 3 people to judge something. Now we finally get to the cases in the Mishnah where we say that you need 23 dayanim. So the Mishnah had said dinin nefroshes chola, that dinin nefroshes require 23, and one of the ones we mentioned is horeveya v'hanirba, whether when there's bestiality involved. The Mishnah had said horeveya v'hanirba be'esrim shloisha, that whether the person was the giver or the recipient of the bestiality, either way you need 23 to judge them. So the Gemara says, Kaposik Vatani. Well, then the Mishnah is saying, as a blanket statement, Loshna Revea Zacha, Veloshna Revea Nakeva. When the animal is Revea, when the animal is, it's a male animal, and it's doing Revea to a person, conceivably the person could be a man or a woman. And the Mishnah is saying, as a blanket statement, that either way, there's going to be skila involved, and that you're going to need 23 to judge that case. So, Bishleimer Revea Nakeva. So now I can understand where we get that when it comes to a woman, who was the subject of Revea. Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, V'horagta Seisha V'asa Behema. The Pasuk says that when there was bestiality, you should kill the woman and the animal. So therefore, and it's clear, therefore, that you need, and we have a hekesh over there between the woman and the man, and the animal. And since as the Mishnah had told us, and we're gonna revisit it in the Gemara later on, in a couple of dafim, that we need 23 for Dinin Afarshas of the person. So therefore, we also need 23 for the Shur as well. Ella Revea Zacha Min Alon, but if it was a male animal committing bestiality with a male person, so the male person was the receiver of it, how do we know that you need 23 to judge that case? So the answer is dichtiv, because the pasuk says called sheichev behema mos yumos. The pasuk says anybody who lies with an animal is put to death. That's referring to a reveya zacher. That's referring to the way the person is the active partner and the animal is the recipient. Now, in inyan l'sheichev, now we don't really need that pasuk to tell us about a man who commits bestiality, who is the active partner with an animal, because we have other pesukim that mention the same point. Tneu inyan l'nishkav, therefore instead we have, as the usual rule in Gemara, when we have a pasuk that refers to one thing, we can instead reuse it to refer to something slightly related but different, so then we would refer it instead to the nishkav where the man is being used by the animal. And v'apke rachmona b'loshen sheichev. Now in that case, why doesn't the pasuk just say flat out kol nishkav and behema? Why use the word sheichev then, if in fact we're referring to he's the nishkav, he's the one that the animal is, he's the one where the animal is doing it, and he's the recipient. The reason is la'akushi nishkav l'sheichev. The reason would be in order to make a hekesh between those two cases. Just like when the man is the one committing bestiality with the animal, then we would need 23, and we know that again because the pasuk says that when a man commits bestiality with an animal, and he's the one who's doing it to the animal, then he and the animal both get skila. And again, the Hekesh tells us that just like he needs 23, so does the animal. Af nishkav huv emtid, esim v'shloisha, the same thing. We're going to say when it comes to the nishkav, because the pasuk is speaking of the nishkav in Parshas Mishpatim, with the pasuk called sheichev v'mehema mois yumas, but using the word sheichev rather than nishkav, then that tells us that the same dinim apply, whether sheichev or nishkav. Either way, we need 23 to judge the person and 23 to judge the animal. Okay. Next, the Gemara continues. Shara Nisko Ba'esu Meshloisha. The Mishnah had said another example where an animal needs to be judged and based in is a shur that needs skila, for example, because it killed somebody. So then also, Ba'esu Meshloisha. Shanema, and the reason is because, as the Pasuk says, a shur Yisoko Vagamba Olav Yomos, as the Pasuk says, the shur should be given skila, and also the owner should be put to death. Now we're going to explain in a second, the owner of a shur that killed somebody is not actually put to death. Here we're talking even a shur muad, even the animal has done it three times, which is what this pasuk is talking about. The owner was not actually put to death, instead he needs to pay a koifer. But nevertheless, you have that expression that puts them together, k'misas abaylam, k'chmisas ashur. So we learn from that, the same way as the owner would be executed by a beis din of 23, the same way the shur requires a beis din of 23. Normally, Abaya l'Rava. So Abaya asks Rava, where b'chlal are we getting that it doesn't mean to put the owner to death? Mimai d'hai v'gamba olav yumos lich misas b'ayim kach misas asher hu da'asa. How do we know that in fact that pasuk is telling us is being used for that hektish? Emelak tolahu da'asa. Maybe indeed it's being used to tell us that the owner of the animal himself is being executed. So how are we going against the complete pshat of the pasuk? The simple pshat is v'gamba olav yomos, the owner is indeed put to death. So how can we go against that pshat? Omale, so Rava answers him, Cain, if that were the case, that the owner is actually Chayav Misa as well, if we were to say that, Lichtiv, Gamba Olav, Velishtoit, then the Pasuk could have just said, the Pasuk could have said, Asher Yisak over Gamba Olav, the owner is given Skila, and also its owner. And we would understand just that, that it means that they're, that both of them are getting Skila. Since it says that extra word yumos, then we understand that it means something else. It means to make the hekesh, and it means to say that that the owner is not actually put to death, but rather that there's a comparison between him and the shur. Tosfos also discusses maybe it means misa b'dei shemayim, let's say yomos. When it says yumos, implies by beis din. So the Gemara says, what do you mean, b'skila sakadaydach? What do you mean, that the owner conceivably would get skila? Kotel iu b'sayif memoidim b'skila? What would be the logic? If the person himself were to kill, then he would be chayev hereg. Out of the four Mrs. Bastins, we're going to have a, as the Gemara is going to explain in a second, you have different opinions about what the order of the Dalad Mrs. Bastins is in terms of how severe they are. But skila is definitely higher than hereg. So, and if he himself kills, he's going to get hereg. He's going to be executed by having his head chopped off. So what's the logic? Kotel ihu b'sayif. If he himself had killed, he would be getting sayif, which is the third or fourth of the Mrs. Bastian. Kotel shoda b'skila. Mamona b'skila. What's the logic that if his mamon, that if his shor, which belongs to him, had killed, that instead he would get skila, which is a much higher punishment? So therefore, it's not logical to say that he would get skila in the first place. So why would we think that he would get, why would we think that he get, so why would we think, even if the pasuk hadn't said yumos, that he should get skila? Well, the Gemara says, v'duma hai dekosa rachmana yumos, la kuli alei. So maybe you could say, fakir, the word yumos is coming to be meka on him, la puki misayif lechenek. Maybe the word is, fakir. In general, in the Torah, we say that whenever it says yumos without specifying what the punishment is, then it means that he's getting chenek. So maybe the pasuk is saying over here that instead of having, maybe we would say he is being put to death because his animal killed, but instead of it being hereg, instead we're going to downgrade him to chenek, and maybe the word yumos is coming to tell us that. Well, that would work very nicely according to the opinion of Reb Shimon later on in the Masechta, who says that chenek is higher in the list than hereg. We usually say the list skila, sefer, hereg, and chenek, and that's actually in the order of their severity. Skila is considered the harshest, then sefer, then hereg, then chenek. Reb Shimon, though, holds the other way around. Reb Shimon holds that chenek is less. Reb Shimon holds that chenek is more severe than hereg. Later on in the Masechta, we're going to discuss in detail why they hold their respective opinions. So, if you say that chenek is if you're going to say that on the other hand, that the pasuk is not telling us that the owner is put to death at all, and that the words yumas in the pasuk is only there for a hekesh, well then you would say hanichalamando amachenek chomer. Well, that would work well according to the opinion that chenek is more serious, is more severe, and then you would say therefore, so the Torah is telling us that he's not going to get that severe punishment of chenek. And instead it means it's there only for the Jerusha. But if you say that chenek is less severe than hereg, maybe you should say the pasuk is telling us if he himself had killed, he would get hereg, which is more severe, because instead it was his shor that killed, then we'll give him a break and instead he'll get chenek, which is less severe. But maybe it still means that he's being put to death. And the answer is loy sakadaydach. You can't think that way, that he should get executed at all. Bichtiv, because after all, the pasuk continues im koifer yushas olav. The pasuk continues if a ransom is imposed on him, then he pays that ransom. V'isakadaydach baktolahu. If you're going to say that he would have been deserving the death penalty, v'hoksiv loy sikho koifer lenefesh retzeach. Well, then you have a pasuk elsewhere at the end of parashas at the end of Parashas Maaseh, that says, "Don't take a koifer, don't take a ransom for the life of a retzeach. Instead, you have to execute him." So this fakir, if the pasuk over here is saying that you do take a koifer for him, then that itself means that he's not chayav misa in the first place. Well, the Gemara says, Adrabba, Mishum Hi Gufa. Well, isn't that the very point? You would say, if he himself killed, it's not going to be enough for him to pay money. Ela Biktola, rather you have to execute him. Kotal Shoreh, but you could say that maybe the Pasuk is implying that if his Shoreh killed, Lifrik Nafshim Mamayna, then he needs to ransom himself with money. So maybe, in fact, the Pasuk with Vagamba all of Yomos, maybe indeed, the Pasuk is saying, the owner is Chayev Misa. However, if he pays a kofer, then he can get out of it. Had it been that he himself, rather than his shur killed, we wouldn't even give him that break, and we would say altogether that he's Chayev Misa regardless, and he can't even pay for it. And Meshach Chochma makes a point that maybe we would say, okay, what are you going to say? That if the guy can't afford the kofer, is basically going to execute him? What's the logic of that? So he says maybe it means the Goyal Adom would be able to get him. Anyway, the point is, how do we know that it doesn't mean any of that, and that the Galam Ba'al of Yomos never means in the first place that the owner is Chayav Misa, but only that he has to pay, and we use it only to teach us this Hekish of Kemisa Sabailam Kach Misa Tashur? How do we know? Elo Omer Chizkiah, so rather, Chizkiah explains, V'chein Tonet Dvei Chizkiah, and we learn similarly in a Braisa from the Yeshiva of Chizkiah, so in other words, Chizkiah didn't just teach this as an Amora. He also composed a braisa that says the same thing. When the omakra, the pasuk says most yumas hamaka retzeachu. The pasuk says again there in Parashas Mishpatim when you're talking about a retzeach having to be killed, it says the one who killed has to be executed because he's retzeach. So we learn from that. What's those extra words? You execute him for killing, for his own killing. You don't execute him for his shor killing somebody. So ultimately, that's where we learn from, therefore, that there's no killing, there's no execution of the owner of the shor for his shor killing, and therefore, and only when the shor was a moored, then he pays a koifer. So now, when it says v'gamba all of yomos, then we can use it for that drasha about k'misas abaylam, k'misas shor, that just as if it were to be a case where he's chayav misa, where he's being tried for a chiyuv misa, and he needs to be tried by a beis din of 23, so it is also with a shor that it needs to be tried by a beis din of 23. So now the Gemara goes into a related point. You know, all this time we're talking about a shor and niskal. Now in the Torah we have, in halacha for all times, we have two ways in which a shor, two circumstances in which a shor would be killed. One is where there was bestiality involved that we talked about before, and the other one would be when the shor killed somebody as we were just discussing now. But now you have another. You have in history. You have one other example where a shur is being killed, namely by Har Sinai. The pasuk tells us that as long as the Shechina is on Har Sinai by Matan Torah and for a period of time after it. So the pasuk says Lo Siga Bar Yod. Nobody is allowed to touch or come close to Har Sinai, except for Moshe and Aaron and the other ones who are supposed to go up there. And the pasuk says in Behemein Ish Lo Yichya, whether man or animal. And it's not going to live, it's going to be killed. So now, the Gemara asks, suppose that a shur went up to the mountain by Har Sinai, and it had to be judged, and executed, because when the pasuk says the shur or the person is going to be killed, we don't mean that just they're going to die on the spot. We mean that they have to be brought to Beis Din, and they have to be judged, and there has to have been Edim Vahasra, and the whole business. So how many dayanim would have been needed for that? Tosfos explains the question is not so much about a person. The question is not so much about a person who went up there, because then it's obvious that you would need 23. Because Tosfos points out, Yisrael had already come along and told and then suggested to Moshe about setting up Sanhedrins, so they had already the concept of Sanhedrin Katana at that point, and therefore it's obvious that we would need three people to judge that kind of case. But the question is about the animal, where maybe when they'd set up Bote Dinim, they hadn't yet set them up for animals necessarily. That's only after the Torah was given, and here we're talking about before the Torah is given. Different Mephoshim talk about the fact is it's not so simple that Yisrael's advice to appoint judges was before Matan Torah anyway. There's the whole Machlokas in Sanhedrin. Rashi mentions that on the Pesukim in Parashas Yisrael, whether B'chlal whether Yisra had come before Matan Torah or after it. And if you say that this is after, and if you say this is after Matan Torah, then not necessarily are there Dayanim yet. Rabbi Yaakov Emden discusses that point, and he points out that after all, the Shekhinah didn't just leave Haus Sinai until right after Matan Torah. It stayed there until they left Haus Sinai, which was even after the Mishkan had been set up. So therefore, even according to the opinion that Yisro came later, you still have plenty of time for there to be Dayanim to be judging people who went up to Haus Sinai. So now the question is, would the same rule apply as far as animals? Tosfos also wonders about my dehava hava. What's done is done. It's a one-time thing in history. There's never again going to be a Matan Torah. So therefore, what does it matter? So Tosfos says we need it to understand the Psukim. Because we want to understand the psukim, we want to understand that point, how many people would be needed for that purpose. Different other mafarshim point out different possibilities why we need it. And the Yad Ramah, in fact, explains in a little more detail. Look, the pasuk tells us he's chayav misa, so we want to understand then how that misa would work, how many people would actually be needed in order to judge him. There are different other mafarshim who point out about it. One interesting point: the Meiri brings from a Mechilta from a Yerushalmi that the din would apply not only to Haus Sinai but also to the Mishkan and the Beis Mikdash. If an animal wanders in there, then it also is chayav misa, and not if you bring it to the korban, but if an animal stam wanders in there, and therefore the question would be how many people you need to in order to judge it. And then there's further explanations about that. Why, how would that be? Even a person is only chayav misa b'dei shemayim, only if he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. An interesting point is maybe when the animal is still there inside the Beis Mikdash, then maybe at that point it would be chayiv skila. Anyway, different mafarshim talk about different other possibilities what the nafkamina of it would be. Where as you often have, a nafkamina can be in connection with nzorim, for example. Let's say a person makes a neder. I'm gonna give to tzedakah a certain amount of money, about as much as the number of dayanim who are needed to judge an animal that had gone up to Haus Sinai. So then we need to know how many people that is. Anyway, whatever the case, that's the question. So the question is, mi gomer shami doros oloi. Do we learn something that happened as a one-time thing by Matan Torah? Do we learn from that to future generations or the other way around? Do we learn from future generations to then? Just like in future generations, an animal is going to be judged, needs 23, so now also needs 23 oloi, or do we not say that? So it must say Toshma, the Tani Rami by Yecheskel. Well, we can prove, because Rami by Yecheskel says, Im behemim ish lo yichya, the pasuk says, whether man or animal, it will not live, it's going to be killed. So we have a hekesh, ma ish b'chav gimel, af behemah b'chav gimel, just like a person would require 23 to judge him, and that we know, as Tosfos says, they already had the concept of Sanhedrin at that point. So the same way an animal is going to require 23. So the answer is yes. If an animal had gone up to Haus Sinai, then you would need 23 to judge it. The Mishnah continues. Ha'ariva hazevchol. The Mishnah mentions other cases where we need a base skin of 23 is not just when it comes to a shur who kills a person, but also the Mishnah mentions a number of different wild animals: a wolf, a lion, a bear, a leopard, or a bardless or a snake. Now Rashi defines that a bardless, he gives a French translation for it, putius, which is a polecat. It's a little polecat. It's a little animal similar to a weasel or a skunk. Tosfos wonders about that. Such animals are not so vicious as to kill people. So Tosfos discusses some other possibilities that a bardless would actually be some kind of dangerous snake. There are other possibilities as well, and a bardless can also mean like a leopard or something, whatever the point, or a hyena, whatever the point is, that it says these are all dangerous animals. So the Mishnah had said that you need a Beis Din of 23 to judge them and execute them. Omer Shlokish v'hu shehe misu. So the Shlokish says that would only be if such animals actually killed someone. Aval lo he misu lo. If they didn't kill anybody, then no, you don't just say they're automatically dangerous animals and anybody who sees them and kills them is a good thing. No, you have to wait until you have to see if they actually kill anybody. Otherwise, we assume that they can be tamed. Alma Kasava. So we see that Rish Lakish holds that. So what it is in Mishnah when we mention these six animals, Rabbi Eliezer Omer Kol Hakodim LaHogan Zochah. Rabbi Eliezer says whoever finds them and kills them first is Zochah. He did a good thing by removing a danger. But Rish Lakish is saying even Rabbi Eliezer is talking about only when they actually killed already. So Rabbi Eliezer would say in other words, the Tanakhama had said that you need 23. Rabbi Eliezer is saying, Kol HaKodim LaHogan Zochah, he's saying you don't need 23, but you could kill them right on the spot, but the fact is they need to have killed first. You can't stand and say you see somebody's pet lion, you can automatically kill it. Rabbi Shlosh Lakish is saying that's not what Rabbi Eliezer means. So Alma Kasava, Yesh Lahem Tarvus, meaning we see from that that Rabbi Shlokish holds that it is possible to tame a lion or any of these other creatures. So therefore, so it's not considered hefker. So if they killed, then fine, you can kill them. But otherwise, it's not considered hefker. And so the only machlokes would be, once they killed, do you need a base in a 23 to try them and have them executed, or can anybody do it? But Rish Lakish is saying it needs to be, they do have an owner, and you can't stam willy-nilly kill them. That's the point of Rish Lakish. So Amal Kasava, Yeshlahen Tarbus, V'Yeshlahen Bailim. So we see, therefore, that he holds that it is possible to tame them, and it is considered somebody has a valid ownership of them, and you can't stam kill them. Rabbi Yochanan, though, understands Rabbi Eliezer to be saying that you can that they can be killed on sight even if they haven't killed anybody. So in other words, according to Rabbi Yochanan, the flow of the Mishnah would be the Tanakhama is saying you need 23 to judge it when they killed, and Rabbi Eliezer is saying not only if they killed do you not need 23, but even if they didn't kill, you need 23. Just the fact that somebody has a lion is reason enough to kill it. Alma Kasava, Ein Lehem Tavus, Ein Lehem Bailim, which shows, therefore, that Rabbi Yochanan holds they can't be tamed. They're not considered to have an owner, so they're considered like hefker because the owner shouldn't have been raising it in the first place. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, then in our Mishnah you could kill them on the spot. Okay, the Gemara says Tnan, Rabbi Eliezer Omer Kol HaKodim LaHogan Zochah. Well, let's look again at the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer had said that whoever kills them first is Zochah. B'shleima l'Rabbi Yochanan. Now, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's easy to understand what he means by Zochah. Zochah implies that he gains something from it. In other words, it doesn't just mean that he's Zochah as in like he did a mitzvah. It means he's Zochah in something tangible. So, b'shleima l'Rabbi Yochanan, l'may zocha, zocha l'oran. So, according to Rabbi Yochanan, you can say that when Rabbi Yochanan says, kol ha-kodim l'hogan, he's zocha, then it means he gets to keep the skin. Since the animal is considered hefker, then therefore when he kills it, the meat he may not have much to do with, but at least the skin he could keep for himself and use it for some useful purpose. Elul Rish Lakish, but according to Rish Lakish, the animal did have an owner. Fine, he wasn't, now that it turned out to be dangerous, then we have to kill it. And Rabbi Eliezer is saying you can kill it on the spot and not wait for the Beis Din of 23 to try it. But nevertheless, the fact is it has an owner. Why wouldn't we return the skin to the owner? Why would we say that the whoever killed the animal is Zoyche? So the answer is Kivin Shehem Nisa, because since he killed it, Shavinu Rabbanan, Kaman Megomer Dinayu, the Chachamim are treating it as though the Beis Din had actually been judged by a Beis Din of 23. Because again, according to Rabbi Eliezer, you're saying that you don't need to judge it with a Beis Din of 23. It's enough anybody can see it and kill it. So it's considered as though Nigmar Adin, the Isturei Hanah Ninu. At that point, it's considered an Isur Hanah. The fact is, for example, with a Shur Aniskol, if a Shur kills somebody, then the Din is, once Beis Din has issued the verdict and the animal is Chayiv Misa, then it becomes also Bahanah. Well, the same thing over here. We're going to say that this lion or bear or what have you, the same thing, once a person unilaterally, according to Rabbi Eliezer, which he can do, judge that it needs to be killed because, according to Rish Lakish, it already killed somebody, and now he's going to take the matter into his own hands and actually kill the animal. Then fine, at that point it becomes also bana. Well, then the skin is also for the is also to the owner. So therefore he can keep it. So my zocha, zocha l'shamayim. So therefore, necessarily you have to say that you write the word zocha What does he mean? He's zoicha to Hashem. In other words, that he has a schus in Hashem's eyes that he removed a dangerous thing. But nevertheless, we would still say that that's what it means. So it wouldn't mean therefore that. So in other words, according to Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, so it's like this. In other words, again, according to Rish Lakish, what it is like this. The Tanakhama says that the animal always has to be judged by 23. Rabbi Eliezer would be saying that and obviously you're judging it with 23 only when it killed, according to the Chachamim. Rabbi Eliezer would say, according to Rish Lakish, that if it killed, you don't need 23, anybody can kill it. And Zocha would have to mean Zocha Lashemayim, it's also Bahana, but he did a mitzvah by doing that. According to Rabbi Yochanan, the flow of the Mishnah is the Chachamim are saying you need 23 if it killed. And according to Rish Lakish, if the animal hadn't killed, if the bear or the lion or whatever hadn't killed, then you can't kill it at all. It has an owner and you can't do anything with it. According to Rish Lakish, according to Rabbi Yochanan, the flow of it is the Tanakhama is saying these animals killed, you need 23. Rabbi Eliezer would say that even if these animals didn't kill kolakodim lahogan zocha, just the fact that you see that there's a bear or a lion or a wolf or whatever, go ahead and kill it. And zocha and you use zocha to keep the skin. Tosfos points out there's a case in Baba Kama that mentions a cat that's dangerous, where you kill it, and there you can keep the skin. There everybody would agree you can keep the skin, but perhaps just because even Rabbi Yochanan would agree it's legitimate to keep a cat as a pet in the first place, but not a bear or a wolf or a lion or the rest of them. And when the Mishnah had continued, Rabbi Akiva had said that Misosin ve'Esther Mesloisha. So the question is, Rabbi Akiva, Haino Tanakama, isn't he saying the same thing as the Tanakama, who also said you need 23? And the answer is Ikabanau Nochosh. The argument between the Tanakama and Rabbi Akiva would be as far as the snake. You have six animals mentioned in the Mishnah, and the Tanakama would say a snake is the sixth one, and he also needs 23 in order to judge it and kill it. Rabbi Akiva would say a snake is an exception. You don't need, he would say that a nochosh, he says a nochosh is always considered dangerous, and therefore you would have to, and therefore, Rabbi Akiva would say you kill it regardless, and you don't wait until it kills. But the other one, he would say that you have to wait until, he would say that you don't need 23 to judge it. You can just kill it on the spot, as opposed to the other ones. I skipped a few lines in the Gemara. Tanya Chavasei did a shlokish echad shor shehemis. Whether a shor killed the echad behemah b'chayi shehemisu, or whether a domestic or wild animal killed b'chof gimel, you need 23. Rabbi Eliezer and a shor shehemis be'etzim shloisha. Rabbi Eliezer says a shor that killed requires 23. Or shah behemah b'chayi shehemisu, whereas any other animal, domestic or wild, that killed kol akodim lahogan zocha behem l'shamayim. Whoever killed him first is zoicha to Hashem. He did a mitzvah, so that Braisa agrees exactly with Rish Lakish's understanding of what Rabbi Eliezer means. With that said, though, the halacha is like the Chachamim that they always need to be judged by 23. Okay, and then we said Rabbi Akiva Oymachula, Rabbi Akiva Haina Tanakama, Ikabanau Nochosh, that Rabbi Akiva would hold that a Nochosh is an exception. You don't need 23 to kill it. There, anybody can do it, as opposed to the other animals. You need a base din of 23. Worth mentioning in this connection, by the way, before we end. So here we're saying that a lion can never fully be tamed. Rabbi Yochanan is saying that lions and other such wild animals like that are not bnei taubos. You can never really fully tame them. Even you think they were tamed, and all of a sudden they show their true nature, and they show that they're after all a wild animal. Some years ago there was an example of that with a famous thing that made headlines, where a guy was attacked by his pet tiger. But anyway, the Rebbe makes an interesting point from that in a Sicha. We have Bilam compares the Jewish people to a crouching lion. And so the Rebbe explains in the Sicha, the point of it is, the same way as a lion, we're saying, it may live for years and years as a seemingly tame animal, but then one day it goes and kills somebody, and we're saying that shows that all along it wasn't Ben Taribus, it never really had been fully domesticated. The same way a yid, he may be living for years and years, not even acting in the slightest way like a yid, but all of a sudden the chips are down, and something all of a sudden out of the blue, a yid shows that he really has that power of a lion, and he really shows that he shows his true nature as a yid. That's the connection, that's the comparison of a yid to a lion. That no matter what, even you think for years and years he's been tamed and domesticated and acting like any other person in the world, like any goy, but all of a sudden you discover it's not so, and he has the power of a yid within him.
Okay, yeah.